Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Have you done a podcast before, Chloe?
Podcast? Have I done a podcast myself? I don't know. I've done interviews, a bunch of them, radio.
Right. This could be a first, then.
I think it's my first podcast.
It's a new experience. Cheers.
Nice.
I listened to your husband do a brilliant one a few years back with Flea on the Mark Maron podcast.
Yeah.
Incredible.
We were there, but then we left the room because it was taking a little while, and we went for donuts.
Oh, very nice.
The kids.
Yeah. Oh, so you've been in the famous garage.
Yes.
Love it.
Yes.
Has it got a vibe?
Yeah. I like that famous garage. Actually, it was funny because there was a little Barbie doll that was called the Crazy Cat Lady.
Right.
And it looked exactly like my friend who rescues cats all the time. Like, she lives up in San Francisco. So I was like, ooh. I took a picture. I was like, I found your...
your doll doppelganger.
Yeah, exactly.
Are you a pet person in the Trujillo household?
We have a Frenchie, a French bulldog.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, he's so sweet. Like, you could do whatever you want with him. He's like, isn't it so cool? The coolest dog. And before that... when I moved in with Robert, he had two chows, crazy chows.
They're yappy, I hear.
And then my daughter actually loves animals, so she also has two birds. But if it was up to her, she would have, we would
it
have
would
a farm.
It would be like Dr. Dolittle.
Seriously, yeah.
I'd like to ask you, if it's okay, about your childhood and your upbringing in Paris, because from the little snippets of interviews that I've read, it sounds like a very unique and quite fascinating and quite bohemian childhood. First of all, if we could chat about your parents and what they did for a job and
their artistic
background.
Well, by the time I was born, they were fashion designers and they had their own brand. Before that, my dad was always a fashion designer. His life story is interesting, but I'm not going to go into too many details because... but anyway, he left his home a very young age and kind of built, like, from nothing, you know, coming from a very poor family, and then he just built this fashion kind of empire almost, but, you know, slow over the years.
Were they both French?
No. So my dad is French and my mom is German.
Right.
And my mom was a model in Germany, and they met... Actually, they met, and my mom always tells me, like, oh, I was with my boyfriend, and then your dad was sitting across, and he kept, like, you know.
Like, trying to woo her.
Yeah, exactly. And then, that's it. And then, so, after they got married, my mom took over more of the artistic, creative side of the business, and my dad was still doing the creative a little bit, but he's so good at business that, you know, so they kind of joined forces and they built their own women prêt-à-porter, like we say, ready-to-wear fashion. So I grew up never having to shop for clothes, because even when I was little, you know, they would do, like, for me and my sister, like, always, like, you know, smaller size of whatever they would create. Not the whole collection, so because they would create, like, an extensive collection.
So you always had kind of very unique, was, special garments.
Yeah, but the thing that was crazy is when you become a teenager, you know, you want to look like everybody else or your peers, uh-huh, you know. Yeah. You want to kind of associate.
You want
to fit in. And I remember, you know, my mom had those leggings made that were made out of, like, they were, like, turquoise. There are other leggings with, like, airplanes on them. And now, you know, everybody wears leggings. But back then,
yeah,
I went to school with them, and everybody, all the my friends were like, are you wearing your pajamas in school? You know, I was like, no.
So were you picked on for being an arty kid?
Well, I always felt, like, different.
Yeah.
Because, you know, even in school, when you first start the year, every year would be the same. Like, write your name, what your parents do, and blah, 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 and all this. And I never knew what to write for what my parents did. I was like, I mean, yeah, they work in fashion. They do this, they do that. Like, to me, it was so extensive what they did. I was like, okay, my mom, you know, we call it styliste in French, fashion designer, styliste. My dad, like, okay, you know, he's taking care of the business and also a styliste and this and that. But then they had, like, such weird hours compared, you know, like, my parents hardly stepped into any of my schools because they were working, you know, super late hours.
Were they both very self-made?
Both very self-made,
types.
Yeah. But then, you know, they had also, like, parties at the house, and they had also customers that were, some of their clients were artists themselves. So, visual artists, but musicians, you know, celebrities.
So you always grew up around very interesting people, right?
Yes. Even, like, porn stars.
Amazing.
Like,
you know. The full spectrum.
So I always, like, grew up around, you know, this kind of, this kind of environment was always there for me.
Did you say you had one sister? Sorry.
I have two. But the younger one is 14 years younger than me. So that's why, you know, when we were kids, I was already 14 when she was born, the other one. So, you know, I was already more like a babysitter.
My sister's like 8 years younger than me, and I thought that was quite a big gap.
Yeah,
but
14, yeah.
Massive, isn't it?
Yeah. So, you know, I never really saw her growing up. I mean, you know, I see her, of course, but, you know, I don't know what happened in her childhood or, you know, that kind of stuff. Because I was doing at 14, I was with the punk rockers.
Well, 14 is the age when you fall in love with music and the nightlife.
Yeah, exactly.
So when does music come into your life, and what music is the first genre or style that really captures your imagination?
Well, music was always in my life, first of all. So when I said my parents were working late hours, so my mom had her parents move into the apartment across the street from us so they could help take care of us, me and my sister, you know, after school and all this. And so my grandfather was a professional opera singer.
Oh, wow.
So music was always around. And my grandmother...
Were they German?
They were German.
Yeah.
And my grandmother actually played the piano quite a bit. So I grew up around music. And then my dad always loved music, both my parents. But my dad was more like rock, and he's the one that got me into metal and all this.
Oh, so he wasn't just like a rocker, he was a metalhead.
Well, not really a metalhead, because he's open to, like, a lot of different styles of music. Like, right now, what he listens to jazz and blues, you know, he's moved on.
Yeah,
you know, but he loved, like, Jimi Hendrix. Yeah. But I remember as a kid, I was really fascinated by Killers by Iron Maiden, because he had the little cassette, and I just loved that, you know, the cover art. I was like, oh, wow, you know, and I was super young, and I kept listening to this. I'm like, wow, you know. I didn't speak English back then, and I was just, like, looking. You know, like, back in the day, you could open the thing.
Yeah, you'd sit there for hours, wouldn't you, and look through the lyrics and who produced the records and the art director and everything.
And so that was kind of, like, the first fascination with like a cover art. And I remember I was reproducing, I did plenty of Eddies.
Yeah, yeah. You know? From every album,
I just love. Yeah. But, you know, he listened to a lot of AC/DC, to a lot of Jimi Hendrix. And I always like kind of like power. Like, it just made me feel good all the time. But then I got into, you know, when I was a teenager, then I got into like more extreme, like death metal and grindcore and all that.
So that's when you found like your scene.
Yeah, yeah. As a teenager, I mean, I was hanging out with a lot of punk rockers too, so we listened to a lot of punk rock, but thrash and then death metal, and I was going to all the shows, and soon enough I made friends with everybody that worked there. I was getting invites to go to shows, and I, you know, it's just, yeah.
What an exciting city to be a teenager in. Like, I grew up in the suburbs, and so it would always be a very exciting adventure for us to go into Birmingham city centre and see shows there. But were you really like in the middle of the heart of Paris?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, completely. Because, you know, my parents, their business was in Les Halles. If you know, that's really centred. So I feel like I grew up around that neighbourhood, you know.
Was it a safe place to grow up? The city center of Paris,
more or less, you know. Rue Saint-Denis was, yeah, more or less, but it's, you know, I mean, it's not the safest, but not the worst either. Yeah. You know,
there's just enough danger that it's exciting, but it's not
exciting, but I mean, I've had some encounters that are not so happy, but yeah. But I actually, it teaches you to be tough and you know,
I think
and strong,
so.
And yeah. Know, you know,
and street smart,
exactly. Yeah, so and definitely adds, yeah.
The art itself from Paris, you know, from poetry to music to literature to sculpting, like it's a very
I feel lucky,
magical place, isn't it?
Growing, yeah, completely.
So agree. Did you spend a lot of time in the museums and the galleries? And
yes, I mean, I was very close to the Louvre, so I would go to the Louvre very often and sketch, or I would sketch in the metro, you know. I would always, yeah, but it's funny when you move out of your country, you know, of course you start missing your family and friends, and then now I miss even the walls, like I miss the ambiance of like cafes and filling up and all this, you know, and the certain foods and everything, but I you know, you take it for granted when you grow up around it. Everything is a monument, basically.
Yeah,
especially in the center of Paris, and you know, with what happened with Notre Dame recently, it really affected me. I walk by almost every day going to my high school, you know. It's just, but you take it for granted, you just, you know, it's part of the scene that you see every day, but it's when you move away that you really realize the value and, you know,
and how privileged you were, really, to be surrounded by such history. And what took you over to the States in the first place? And what year did you move?
I moved in year 2000, through singing, actually. I did musical theater.
Okay, wow.
Yeah.
So did you study music or art at college, or...?
I did a little bit. I was also part of a dance company in Paris, so I did dance a lot. I feel like I studied everything because I started with science, you know.
I have got science in the mix as well.
Yes.
Wow.
Because even my high school graduation, which we call baccalauréat, was a bac C. Doesn't exist anymore now. It's called bac S, scientific, but C is mathematics and physics. And that's because I was always fascinated by math. It started when math became abstract, which I believe has a lot of connection with the art. You know, it involves imagination and, you know, it's a different part of your brain. I hated math when it was just numbers. Mm-hmm. You know, like the thing that says, okay, there's a
algebra
drop that falls every 2 seconds and it's like 4.5 millimeters and my bathtub is like, you know.
Oh, it's like so-and-so buys X amount of bread rolls
and I hated
gives four
that
to that person. How like, many are you left with?
but when it became with the X and the Ys and the all, you know, all the rest, as it became like more complex, I loved it and I was good at it. And so, of course, and I was always doing art. the reason why I studied math after having, you know, my high school graduation is my dad, you know, I wanted to do art, but my dad was like, what, are you going to make a living as an artist? Just study.
My parents did the same with me. You can't study media studies. Don't do English. It's more respectable.
Yeah. Exactly. And so even though he never went, I think because I'm the older sister and he never had the chance to actually study my dad because he came from a poor family and he went straight to work, even though he is an artist himself by, you know, creating, you know, designing. And I think he's, you know, he always missed the possibility of, you know, having just the choice, and who knows what happens in life, and at
trying
least
to
you
give
have
you
that
the
to,
best start.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it was a little bit of a conflict there, but I did get a degree. I went to university called Université Pierre et Marie Curie in Paris, and then after I had a degree, that's, you know, that was enough.
And did you enjoy studying?
I did actually. Yeah. It was fun. But then I found there was within the university there was this little art class, you know, that's like completely, you know, in France it's different. I don't know about UK, but like I could see in the US, you know, even if you study, you can major in one field, but you can still study something in a different field.
Yeah, so you have like a major and a minor. Yeah.
And in Paris, it's, you know, it's more or less free. You just pay for insurance, for health insurance, basically, right, which was 200 French francs at the time. And that's like nothing, you know.
So you can effectively learn now, as much so as like, you physically are capable
so,
of.
So, yeah, so it was like all my, everything I had to study was chemistry, physics. It was all like scientific. So, but there's this extra class that was art. So, and then I started enjoying more going to that the mm-hmm. art thing. And then they put together a show, and then they picked one of my paintings for the flyer of the show. And I was like, oh, that's cool. And then I was so nervous, you know, the show, it's in Paris and people are going to see my stuff. Well, you know, afraid.
Was that
of
the
Christmas.
First time it was going to be put on display publicly? Yeah. Your work? Yeah.
I mean, in a real gallery.
Yeah.
Because I did, you know, people saw my art before, but this was like a real gallery. Mm-hmm. And the response was amazing. And so that's when I was like, oh, man, I wish I could just do this.
That's when you got bit by the bug, right?
Yeah. And so I wanted to have my dad's consent, even though, you know, I didn't really need it. So I said, oh, I really want to study art. So I went, and to switch, so I wanted to still study art history and all the different techniques and everything. So I had to, you know, back then there was no internet. So I had to send one letter. I had to find other professional artists to write letters on my behalf. And I had to send a whole file of art that I did, like originals. But, you know, I mean, I remember the package was like this, you know, big, and sent it to Ministry of Education to see if they would approve that I would go to university to study art. And they did. And so
how many people were they allowed to allocate spaces to? Was competition quite fierce?
Yeah, they look at your I think what helped me, even though it's is because I studied science and I had pretty good grades and everything, so I'm sure they look at, even though it's a different field,
yeah,
they look at your,
could see that you're academic and would work hard. And
but I had to, I mean, the letter, you know, I mean, I had to, yeah, to send a lot of stuff, I remember. So I know I just watched this film on the flight. It was last month, and I couldn't watch till the end because it was about, it's a French movie, it was on the airplane. And it was about the competition for medical school,
right,
where they only had like, we only have like 300 spots, and there's people that really want to be doctors, like, and you know, and there's the story of this one kid that it's already he's on his third year of trying to get in, and how it's like he's like desperate, he doesn't eat, he has books everywhere. And that reminded me of my high school years in math and everything. It's like, you know, you give up everything because you just, you know, you're just studying, It's like I, you know, yeah. So.
Over to America, was that to carry on with music, you were saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of things happen when I started studying art. You know, it was always, like I said, it was always around music, and I was going to shows a lot, and I, for a moment, I had like a band, and I was singing, and I kind of learned to play guitar, then I stopped, then, you know, I knew how to play piano a little bit, and then I started dancing again, which was, it's my way of exercising, because I, you know, I don't like too much going to the gym
yeah.
or anything like that.
I think
that,
if so. You're artistic, you're not really sporty
you
as
saw,
well.
You saw me dance at your party.
I did, yeah. You got the shapes, the moves.
I heard of this audition that my friend told me about for New York. And so I'm like, okay, I'll try. And then I got, you know, didn't hear for like 3 months. And then all of a sudden, so that gave me my first visa. And I moved to New York. And then there I did musical theater, but I also did paint. I worked so many jobs to kind of keep up with the New York expenses and all this. I just, you know, it was intense. And then after 2 years, my friend, who's actually Gail Zappa, she was like family to us. That's a different story. I don't know if you want to hear that
story. I'd love to hear it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, but that's, she, you know, all the kids, to finish up with that, Gail said, oh, just come to LA. You know, all the kids are moved out of the house. You can stay with me however long you want and all this. And then, you know, I stayed. But so my parents, so I think I was 13. My parents went, had to work in LA for their business. And so it was during summer. Probably July, because they would take August off. So July, summer vacation for us. So for some reason, I don't know, I should ask my dad how he found that camp, but he sent us to a camp in Fresno. We've never been to a camp, like American camp.
Yeah.
And I remember just the day he dropped us off, me and my sister, I'm like, I don't want to go back. I don't want to be
here. How long were you going to have to be there for? The whole month?
2 months. 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Sorry, yeah.
But
two
at
weeks.
That age seems like a lifetime,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I was just like, what am I doing here? You know, I spoke English, but I was just like, I don't understand what they're doing. And there was a payphone. Of course, it was disconnected. I was like, oh. So I'm looking. I remember we're in the cabin, and I'm like looking on the ground if I see a quarter to call my parents to come pick me up right away. I found
there's
a
all those forced team building exercises and
yeah,
things like that.
Yeah, and
there?
I was just like, what is this? And
yeah.
You know, and I don't feel like I belong here. And of course, you know, I found a quarter, and of course the phone's disconnected, so I'm like, oh, whatever. And
I'm
then
stuck
they
here, then.
They call us to like, oh, you get to sign up for your activities. I was like, what is this? And then there was this activity called Wet Lake, because they had a lake, and Wet Lake, you could go canoe, kayak, you could do just whatever you want by the lake. So I was like, I'm going to do Wet Lake. And that's all I did every day. And what I did is like lay on the towel, listen to music, and that's all. And there was this guy that was doing the same thing every day next to me. And then one day he just came to me. I was like, hey, what music you listen to? And it was like some metal music. And like, oh, yeah, me too. And then we became friends. And he had this whole thing down, this whole camp thing down, because he was like selling candies on like to other kids.
Yeah,
like, he
amazing.
Had, like, a camp, you know,
yeah, this
like,
hustle
the
going
thing.
On.
But that was Ahmet Zappa. That's
right.
How we became friends. And then we really, you know, we connected. And then at the end of that 2 week session, he's like, hey, you know, if you're going to be in LA, still come by the house. And so that's how we met. And both our families really connected like this. I mean, they stayed with us in France, and, you know, it was really...
Because of that shared love of art, right?
Yeah.
Just a lot in common,
yeah.
Like kindred spirits.
Yeah, definitely. Exactly. Because they, I found like some, yeah, peers almost, you know, yeah, it's just like, that's why I always call them my American family, because it was like really, so yeah, that's how it happened. And then I moved to LA and lived with Gail for a while. And then Robert, who I knew from common punk rock friends back in the day, because I met him the first time, I think I was still in high school.
Right. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And he was with Suicidal.
Yeah.
And then I didn't see him. So I was really good friends with Rocky and Mike Clark. And Suicidal played a lot in Paris. They were really, you know.
I've got a friend who's a French DJ, and you'll never see him without a Suicidal hat on.
Oh, really?
And yeah, I've them and Turbo Negro seem to be two of like the most popular American kind of, well, Scandinavian, but out of France rock bands. They seem to be the two that are embraced the most.
Turbo Negro was, really big too. But yeah, Suicidal, and they played often, so I would see him all the time. And then he played with Ozzy, Robert did, and Ozzy didn't play that much in France, so I didn't see Robert for a while. But then we went, one of Robert's friends, who's also kind of like a big brother figure to me, we went to Donington just to be as tourists, you know, just like, oh, let's go and enjoy shows. And then Ozzy played, and so I saw Robert there for just, you know, a few minutes, actually. Yeah. And then, but when I moved to LA, this friend that I'm talking about actually called me and say, hey, well, no, before that, before moving to LA, I went to Paris. And then I saw this one friend, because he's like a big brother figure to me. And he said, oh, you're moving to LA. Let me give you the phone number of everybody. So he gave me the phone number of Rocky, Mike Clark, Robert, and a bunch of other people that, you know, we know in common. And I didn't have to call anybody. I didn't call Robert, because I'm like, I haven't seen this guy in like 7 years. Why would I call him? Like, you know, I'm going to be
in LA now. Yeah.
I live in LA. You know, but Rocky, I ran into him at a party. Mike Clark, I ran into him like in Venice somewhere. I forgot. You know, I ran into everybody except for Robert. And then a week later, this friend calls me, is like, oh, I talked to Robert the other day, and he says he wants you to call him. I'm like, oh, okay. Like, I didn't even think he would remember me, you know, because we hadn't seen each other. So I'm like, okay. So I call, and it's like voicemail. So I leave a voicemail, and then I don't hear anything for a week. And then this same friend calls and say, Robert got your message. He was in Tahiti surfing. He got your message from the payphone calling his machine, and he mistakenly erased your message, so he doesn't have your phone number. Can you call him back? I'm like, okay, I'll call him, you know, but I was not. And then I called him back, and then, yeah, that's where, but I, you know, that's where things naturally evolved.
Destiny, right?
Seriously.
Do you believe in that stuff?
I completely do. I have another crazy story, because when I first moved in LA, so I didn't have a job. I didn't have anything. I got out of a relationship that was really bad. I was like, oh. That's why when Robert came along, I was like, I don't want any relationship. I'm going to focus on my career. Yeah. And that's when it happens, I guess.
When your guard's down and you're least expecting it.
Yeah. But I was kind of not lost, but I was just like questioning everything. Like, what do I want to do with my life? You know, now I'm in LA. I mean, I know some people. I don't know what, you know.
Did you miss home at this point?
In LA? I was happy in LA. I missed home, but, you know, I was good in LA. I just was really questioning like what my next step was.
Yeah.
In terms of career, mostly.
How old are you at this point?
Early 20s, I think. I don't know. You're making me do the math that I don't like.
The bad math. So you're around that kind of age where you're starting to have to figure out.
Well, yeah, like
adult life.
Like, you know, it's just like, okay, what do I want to do? What's going on? And all this. And then I remember it was Santa Monica Boulevard. For some reason, I don't know why I remember. And I was just walking and I was by myself. And this woman comes across, walks. And, you know, normally I don't, you know, I don't really listen to these people. But this woman comes across, she's like, she's holding my arm and she's like, your angels are talking to me. They have a message for you. And like super serious. And I don't want any money. I'm not that kind of person. But if you want to, they're like screaming at me. If you want to listen to this, here's my number. So she writes her name and number on a piece of paper. And I have, you know, I have some messages for you. So after that, I went back home.
That's heavy, right?
Yeah. And I was like, I got to call this woman. Yeah. I mean, she said she, you know, she's like, I know I can tell you this, but I don't want any money. And, you know, it's just like, but I know you're the kind of person I can talk like that to. And so I call her and then we meet. And then she says, you know, she says that she could see that I was lost. And she says great things. She says like, oh, yeah, you're going to be an artist. She knows nothing about me. I mean, it's just like, you know, and then she says, and then within the next year, you're going to get married. And I'm laughing inside. I'm like, ha, ha, ha. Yeah, right. He's like, he's got a darker skin complexion, long black hair. And he's describing Robert. And then you're going
to
have
two kids. To a T as well. Like, yeah.
Like, you're going to have two kids. And I'm really, like, inside, I'm, like, in disbelief. I'm like, this,
but you're don't just be ridiculous. Indulging it. Yeah, yeah.
But I let her speak. And anyway, and then we part ways. And and then, like, a couple months go by. And then, you know, and then Robert finally calls me. But I'm not even thinking of Robert, like a darker skin like guy with long black hair. I'm like, oh, it's somebody you know. And I'm like, look, like thinking of everybody I know that would fit that description. And I was like, no, no way, no way, you know. But I'm not thinking of Robert. And then, you know, when Robert calls me, and we're meeting just for drinks, and he has one of his friends there that's actually French at the bar. So we're like laughing and I'm almost just talking French to the guy. Not ignoring Robert, but you know, it felt so good for me to speak French after, you know, being so long in the US and like, yeah. And his dad is from the same place my dad is and just like a
so
connection.
You two are really
like
connecting. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. And but I'm not thinking relationship, like I'm not thinking, you know, just connecting as you know, friends and being, you know. And then anyway, and after that evening, Robert walks me back to my car and he's asking me on a date. And inside I was like, no, I don't want any relationship. But because I knew him as a friend before, I said, okay, you know, but deep inside I was like, nah, you know, this is not the time. And then we actually never went on a date. Things that happened naturally, because he called me the following day. I'm like, why is he already calling me? I hung up on him. But then it was like a voicemail. It's like, hey, me and some friends are going to go to the movies. We're going to see that movie. If you want to join, you know, we're in my Venice house. This is the address. And so then when I listened back, I'm like, oh, that's cool. Like, I'd go to the movies.
Because it's a bit more
movies.
Informal.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
I'm like, so I went there. And, you know, and so we started hanging out like this. And then the second time I saw him with friends too. Then slowly friends left because it was getting super late. And then I remember not thinking any date or anything like that, but we ended up at his house listening to, like, he was like playing some, Meshuga or something, or it's like, oh, have you heard Candiria, blah, blah, blah. And then I'm like, have you heard Carcass, or have you heard death? Like, we're listening to like hardcore music, like death metal and all these kind of music until like 5 a.m. I was like, and I'm like looking at the time, and I'm like, okay, I gotta go back to the house, like just the Zappa house. And then we left it at that, and then, you know, it naturally evolved into like a proper relationship, and within a year I was married.
And so the lady was correct on all
the
fronts.
Lady
and
was
you
correct.
Now have two kids.
So yeah. But then I thought about the lady afterwards, yeah. and I wanted to call her back to tell her like you were the phone disconnected. I tried to look her up online. You know how you can look up people, nowhere to be found, and
like
I'm
some
like
some kind of guardian angel.
Yeah,
like
some kind of like lady that just appeared.
That's amazing.
But I love that story because
maybe
it's
subconsciously
so...
she gave you that push that you needed to perhaps be open and
yeah, maybe.
Let the situation pan out.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
And so obviously Robert's a very kind of, you know, man of the earth, likes to surf. Is it a proper arty home, your
yeah.
house now as well? So have you kind of continued what you grew up in your parents' house? Is that almost
yeah.
the dynamic
oh,
for
yeah.
yours now?
I mean, our house is kind of like walking into my artwork. We did like very colorful and all this, but we live in an area that's like, you know, we lived in Venice for a while, but now, you know, we moved a little away and then we're not far from the surf, but we're still like kind of in the mountains. So we have, you know, nature all around and yeah, a lot of it reminds me of, even though Paris is completely different, you know, as far as just the outsides and the, you know, no buildings and all that, but I feel like it's the same kind of creative environment. Like, you know, I mean, both the kids, our kids are super creative, and I felt like I grew up into that, even though my sisters are not artists, but it's you know, was always surrounded by art, and that's what it is now in our home currently. You know, not just you know, I'm doing my artwork and Ty's doing his music and Lula's doing her artwork and Robert's doing his music. It's just like it's
a hub of activity.
I love that energy. Yeah.
What does your son play? Is he guitar or bass or?
He plays bass, but we always thought he would be a drummer. So, you know, Ty grew up, and you know, he never had like a teddy bear, but he had a guitar toy. Always.
Amazing.
I mean, I have, and I realized this after, like looking at the baby pictures and toddler and all this, and I'm like, oh my God, he always has a guitar in his hands. And then my mom gave him one of those toy drum kits, you know, for kids when he was two.
Yeah, so you've just got like the one drum and...
Yeah, well, no, it's like, it was like a little set. It was like two little drums and then a big, the bass drum. So it's, but it's a toy, like
so a
really
miniaturized
a toy, like
version
a
of, yeah.
Miniature. And he was so good. Like, I mean, we have friends that are professional drummers. And then Ty's godfather is Mike Borden, you know. It's just like, and they were like, okay, you got a drummer in your hands. Because even the technique, like how we would like just, you know. And so we thought, oh, well, it's going to be a drummer. And I think there were so many basses laying around that he picked up the bass. He never took a lesson.
Really? Even to this day now?
Even to this day.
I mean, when his footsteps.
He's even better than Robert in certain techniques. It's true. Like,
really?
He's doing a pick technique that Robert's like, I can't even do that. Like, he's so fast, like, with a pick. You know? And I mean, I'm not saying he's better than Robert, but I... You know, Robert,
you love them both equally,
admits,
just in different
yeah.
ways.
But, you know, and Robert didn't really start playing until he was 16. And Ty just picked it up. No lesson, no nothing. I mean, even for the Korn gig, I mean, he had to learn 18 Korn songs at 12 years old. And he was, you know, Robert was on tour. He learned all these songs from a CD, like the CD that you could buy at the store.
And just played along by ear.
And play along by ear.
How did that come about? Is it just because you're friends with those guys?
No. I think they were flying to Detroit, or we were flying to, I don't know. We saw them at the airport. And then they were like, hey, Robert, can we talk to you? And so I think it was Fieldy. I forgot who else was there anyway. And they talked to Robert, and I'm like, well, this is kind of rude. They're like talking, like leaving us. Like, but then Robert comes back and he tells me. He said, "Well, they need a bass player for their South America tour because Feldy is not able to do it." And they're thinking of Ty, and I'm like, "Amazing, so good." And Ty was already. I mean, they saw video. Basically, they already saw YouTube videos of Ty playing, so they knew he was up. You know. But Ty still had to audition. I mean, it's not like it just fell in his plate like this. And every day after school, Ty practiced and learned all these songs for like, I don't know, like 2-3 months, like, you know, but the slapping and everything. And then when came for the little audition, Robert just came back from tour, and I had heard Ty play, but I had not seen him because he would be in his room. And then we, like, after he played, okay, which song would you like to start with, Ty? So he start, yeah, I forgot which one. And even Philly was like, whoa, that's a hard one. Okay. And then he nailed it. And we were like, all like, whoa, okay. And then, okay, which song would you like to do next? And then he played like 3 songs and
just aced
amazing.
It.
Yeah. And then he did, because they never had a rehearsal really before they, so he's like, learn from a CD. The only sort of rehearsal, which was not really a rehearsal, he was invited to just come for sound check at the was it House of Blues in Anaheim, like a proper Korn show that Ty was not playing, but they had a sound check, and so they allow him to play like a couple songs with the band. And I have that on video. I mean, it's amazing already.
And, that's a proud mom moment, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I cried after because I couldn't go to South America because Lula had school. And it was great because his South America tour started right when Robert came home from tour. So there was no like... So I was like, Robert, it's better that you go with Ty because if there's anything he needs, you know, you'll be the, you know, better. I'm not a bass player.
Yeah.
And so Robert went and then I stayed home with Lula. That's how Lula became a huge Korn fan because she's, you know, she was missing her brother and she was just watching the videos and listening to music. I had tears the first video when... You know, I think it's online. You can Google it now. It's just, you know, seeing my son play. I was like, oh, at 12, you know.
And it's incredible.
Yeah.
It's so rare as well. I mean, you don't usually see people under 16.
No.
Ever on a stage of that size with a band at that level.
And he's like, he's got
holding
such
their own as well.
Yeah, stage presence. I mean, even with his little band before, now he's got another band. But, you know, he always, it's... I took them, you know, I stopped working while they were babies to take care of them, both kids. So I would take them on tour with me. So they kind of grew up seeing all the work.
Yeah.
I mean, how many, you know, just, you know, Tai knows everything. Like, he would be helping stagehands sometimes, and then he would be like jamming with James in the tuning room, you know, while the others are getting ready. And even people thought it was Robert playing, and then I was like, oh no, it's Tai. You know, he's like 10 years old or even younger. You know, it's just like, but because I think. I mean, he admits that he was nervous for the first 2 seconds before the first show and before he started playing. And once he started playing, it was like, you know, he's into it. But I think because he grew up seeing that kind of crowd and seeing, you know, because it would be, I mean, at 12 years old, if you throw me on the stage in front of, like, I don't know, 20,000 people or something, I was like, okay, you know, but he's like, he got right into it. And moving and being, you know.
What yeah. about the day that Robert got the call from Metallica? Do you remember that day?
Yeah. I remember because we were about to sit down for dinner. And he got a call. And I was like, I got to go. Okay. I got to go to the airport right now. I'm flying to San Francisco. It's like, okay. But he didn't know if he got it. Because it was like, it was a long process. He did many, many auditions. You know, it was like. I think it was very nerve-wracking for him because it's a lot of pressure. Like, he was working hard on learning all the songs because they got a big repertoire of so many songs. And so he had to, you know, even though you know, we all know the songs, but actually playing them is different. So he was just like learning everything. And then he went once and then it was like, well, I haven't heard, you know, anything back yet. So I think it's not. And then all of a sudden he'll hear back and then he has to go back and do another audition and then they, you know, and then nothing. And then so even when he got the final call, when we're about to eat, he thought, okay, they're going to make me go up there and do another audition or whatever, you know. And it's actually now on footage at the Some Kind of Monster.
Yeah, it's in
the
documentary.
You see he's
isn't it?
Entering a room and everybody's clapping. And he starts clapping too because he's clueless of what's going on. You know, he's like, yay, what? You know, and that's when he learned and then he called me.
It's amazing.
Like, okay, yeah. But up to this, yeah, it was a long road of like, yeah. I felt good about it. It was good. But then it was like, it doesn't hear anything. I was like, well, maybe, you know. So it was kind of like, you know, not knowing was, I think, hard.
I think that band has kind of enjoyed such a renaissance period since him joining as well. I think
yeah.
that it's really
I agree.
Rejuvenated
yeah.
everything about Metallica. I think.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I really love the last two albums that they did together. You know, it's just... Yeah, and everything else. I mean, I just feel, I mean, not because it's my husband, but I really enjoy the energy he brought back to the band.
Talking,
but I love Jason too, so, and Cliff, of course, yeah. You know.
I mean, big boots to fill on all accounts,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, not easy. You know, even when he told me that the audition's actually filmed, I would be freaking out to mm-hmm. know that, you know. Because I'm thinking of my auditions when I did musical theater and all this. It's already nerve-wracking because you already have a panel watching you and judging every move. But knowing that it's also videotaped and it's good, you know, it's there to be kept and, you know, it's never going away. It's not like, you know, you just...
Yeah, it's just the people in the room who will remember. It's
yeah, this is like...
Everyone outside.
Yeah.
So once the kids get a little bit older and you can afford a bit more time for yourself to put back into, you know, creating and mm-hmm. what comes first? Do you focus straight away back on the art, the music, both?
I always did. I never completely gave up singing because it was always kind of it's like breathing for me. So I was even working with Seth Riggs, who actually ended up working with Ozzy for a little while too. Which I haven't seen him in years, but I was, even when the kids were little, and maybe that's why my daughter sings well, because I was always doing my vocal exercises, because I never wanted to lose, you know, the vocal power
yeah,
and all
chops.
This. It's kind of like, yeah, it's kind of like just regular exercise just
yeah.
for your voice. So I always did that, even if it's just at home, because I did at home for a while, just, you know. But painting is the first thing that I could do, even when the babies were napping, you know, when they were babies. And I was like, okay, you know, because it's just, I wouldn't feel good. And there was days where I couldn't, because it's so busy. You know, you feel like you're a machine. You're just like feeding, changing diapers, feeding, changing diapers, trying
Repeat.
To sleep, but not sleep, clean the house, like all that.
Are you someone who kind of needs to get that stuff out and
yeah,
be busy
and,
creating
and if
to
I did, yeah,
maintain
if I didn't
the balance?
Create anything in a day or two, I would wake up with like a knot in my stomach, like anxiety almost, like things need to be expressed. And
so it's a real release for you.
It's a real, yeah, it's like a therapy. And now it's like a need. It's just, you know, like I'm so happy to be traveling here and doing this and painting because it's just.
Well, they're incredibly, like they just give off radiance and joy and love. And obviously the colors are a big part of that with the,
yeah.
the brightness of them. But it's obviously from what's inside you as well. Yeah. Do you plan out?
No.
You just kind of let
yeah.
let the magic
that's,
happen,
that's why
right?
I usually don't listen to music when I paint, unless I'm like at the end of a painting maybe, because I want to be in that zone and really connected, and everything kind of comes through. It's like almost like visions or channeling, you know?
Or like dreaming through. Awake.
Exactly.
It's a bit like that?
Yeah.
Does it ever
like
not
that.
Come?
No.
And does that then, really?
I've never, no.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a gift.
Yeah,
isn't it?
I guess. I don't know anything else. So, yeah, it always comes. I've never been on the, you know.
So you've never
on
had
a blank
like
canvas
the
and be like,
block.
Oh, what I'm, yeah, no.
Wow.
Yeah.
There's certain motifs which seem to, you know, be quite central. The eye mm-hmm. being one.
Yeah.
What do you think that is?
Well, I don't know. I mean, the eye has a lot of meanings. Depending on the context, you know, but I'm not trying to associate, like give it a meaning necessarily, because I like to give my audience like the you know, their own interpretation of my artwork. But, you know, the eye, it could be the all-seeing eye. It's like a protector. It could be like the eye watching over you. It could be, you know, many, many things, or all that is and all these things. I don't know. I'm just obsessed with eyes. I have eyes. I have a big eye where I have eyes everywhere. Yeah, it just comes, you know. I when I paint, I'll just let things happen, and then I can analyze a painting after it's done and seeing, okay, you know, this element or this symbol means this. It kind of like you were saying, like a dream. Where you have different things that happen that don't necessarily make sense. Like, ooh, I'm flying, and all of a sudden, you know, this pig comes and offers me some water, and then this scene, you know, like some subconscious kind of
yeah.
craziness. And then, yeah, so...
Were you saying in an interview that somebody came up to you and said that one of your finished paintings was in their dream?
Yeah.
I mean, that's
she was crying.
Bizarre.
She freaked me out, this woman. But right. then I was, because it was really, I didn't, it was in the very beginning of my painting career. And this woman, you know, I was still kind of more shy about being there when I had an exhibition. Like, I was always there, but more like hiding in the corner and letting the people go through. Now I'm happy to be here, and if people have questions or want to talk to me, or, you know, it's part of the thing. It's one of my favorite things to do, actually, to just, you know, share
yeah, definitely.
More about my process and everything. But in those days, I was afraid to share, because, like, it's something spiritual, something that maybe some people will be like, you know, I can't understand this, or but she scared me for a minute, because she's in front of a painting and she started crying, and she's like, who's the artist? And I'm hiding even more. So I'm like, oh my god, what have I done? And then of course one of my friends who was in that room guided her to me, and that's when she said, I had a dream with this exact image. Oh my god, you know, it's just, you know. And that, you know, made me really realize that, yeah, I mean, information is out there, consciousness is out there, and if you can tap into it and just, you know, she was not an artist, but she might have had the same vision in her dream. She did not replicate it, and I did, and so it's, you know.
That's amazing.
It's kind of like when you see some people that invent the same thing, but they're on opposite side of the earth,
yeah,
and they have no means of communication, and then all of a sudden, oh, he invents that stuff, that same guy, the another guy invents the same thing, but yet, you know, it's kind of like that's kind of how I can compare it to, like, information is there, but
yeah, I think pre-internet that would happen so much more,
yeah.
And obviously now, because information is so widely
shared. I'm wondering if that's numbing us a little bit, all this internet thing. I mean, I just feel that way even with GPS. Now we have GPS. We can go anywhere. We don't pay attention to
the
streets.
A lot of people just look down at their phone as opposed to look around at the buildings and the architecture and the streets. And
completely. Yeah, I agree. It's just, you know.
But it's an interesting, I imagine you're in the same boat as me. It's an interesting dichotomy, because if you're someone like us, who's kind of a freelance, self-employed, someone who's trying to promote their work, mm-hmm. you know, in your case it's art, in my case it's podcast, you quite heavily rely on things like Instagram and Twitter to promote and share and
absolutely
connect and engage.
And I can't, you know, I can't deny it, and mm-hmm. I love it too,
yeah, because there is a lot of positive
and
sides
it,
to it
too. Absolutely, and I love having feedback from people from all over the world. Like, you connect to all over the world. I don't know where some people are, you know, are from and all this, and But you know, and I love that connection that we can have thanks to, you know, the internet and social media and everything. But at the same time, you know, there's like, I think it's a balance.
Yeah, you've got
to
limit it,
right? I mean, it's great to have GPS when you're completely lost and you know, and just like, okay. But like, my mom drives me nuts. She always has GPS in her car, even though she's going to the same place she's been like 100 times. And if I call her, she's in her car, and all I hear is like, tournez à droite, like, turn right, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, can you turn this off, please?
And she's been around, you know, without technology for the majority
of
her life.
Yeah, but she loves it now. She loves it. She's like, it's her thing. No matter where she goes around the corner in the street. She put GPS on. I was like, oh.
As a parent with your kids, how do you kind of ration it with them?
Well, I
they
feel
got quite
lucky
a good handle on
because,
it
because they're really, I mean, they're really good about not being on their device so much. Ty will be on the computer, but mostly to write his beats, like he does write, or his music too. He'll use his Logic Pro, or, you know, and he'll plug in his guitar and plug in his bass and do, or beats with the keyboard and things like that. But he's not, you know, he'll use his phone to call his friends up, or he'll use FaceTime his singer and guitar player of his band lives in Sacramento area, so they go on FaceTime together to actually work.
So they're using technology for creativity and productivity.
Yeah, and the same with Lula. I feel she's not, you know, my kids were never really into video games.
Good for them.
Yeah, and yeah, I'm happy because really, I mean, Ty's always been focused on his music. So, and he skates too. So, it's I feel lucky because I never had to be
the disciplinarian.
Bad parent was like, give me your phone right now.
Can we talk about charity work as we approach the
end?
I know you've done a lot of stuff in the past before.
Yeah.
This current thing is in conjunction with Teenage Cancer Trust, right?
Yes.
But before then, there was is it Musicians Without Boundaries Music Without Boundaries?
Musicians Without Borders.
Borders.
It's still on, actually. I was designing these guitar straps, and we have a few more designs that are going to come out pretty soon. I felt like I wanted to give to a charity that's kind of music connected. And we did some research, and then we finally found Musician Without Borders. And I really, like, you know, it's all about war divides, music connects, and all these messages that I felt really connected to.
Well, it has such a unifying, healing power, doesn't it?
Exactly.
It just brings anyone of any creed, religion, background.
It's like a universal language. I mean, you go to a show, and no matter what the country or no matter what the audience, there can come from any part of the world, and they all connect on this one thing that's music, you know? And it's super powerful. I mean, to me, it's just, you know, it's more powerful than politics. Like,
certainly,
you know, it's just
positive.
Like, so, yeah, something that brings people together, you know? So I really love their message and the work they do, you know, because they go into war zones and do music, provide music education, let people like, okay, let's do a drum circle or let's, you know, and where people experience trauma, you know, fear, all these things, and just it's so healing. So that's how we got started. And I was honored they asked me to design their t-shirt for their 20th anniversary, as well as me doing the guitar straps. So yeah, so it's still ongoing. The t-shirts, we might do another run. I mean, they sold out. But the guitar straps are still, you can find them on my website, and all the profits go to Musician Without Borders.
And is that ChloeTrujillo.com?
Exactly.
Lovely stuff.
Pretty easy.
Right?
Yes.
And then Teenage Cancer Trust, again, they do a lot of work with musicians and music-based events. And is it Roger Daltrey from The Who, who's very heavily involved in it? And they're always doing the concerts in London at the Royal Albert Hall.
Yeah.
And again, just such a beautiful, worthwhile cause.
Yeah.
Because it's given these kids, you know, who have been thrown into horrible scenarios at such a young age, like hope and joy and treatment.
Agreed.
And
yeah.
So, what's the plan for the event and the time that you're here?
Starting at after this podcast, I'm gonna open to the public, and whoever comes in, this is the first day. It's an easy day, and people can watch me live painting. I have a little book signing. I have an art book that I'm gonna do at 7 p.m. here, and then today's gonna end at 8 p.m. So today is kind of free. Then tomorrow we're gonna have for Teenage Cancer Trust a lunch on. Well, I'll be part of it. I'll be painting, but then I'll join the lunch, and I have a few items that are going to be also auctioned off for.
Are they the paintings that are upstairs now?
No, that's different. There's going to be, so this painting, when it's done, is going to go for auction on Wednesday, because I won't be done by then. But I did paint a guitar for the auction, and then there's going to be one of my huge scarves. I do a 2.20 meter silk scarf that's going to be also auctioned off, and some Metallica tickets and
other goodies. They're in town in a couple of nights, aren't they?
They're going to play Thursday.
Wow.
So
that's timed perfectly.
I know, it's kind of crazy, but it's like, okay, you know, we can offer VIP tickets too. Hopefully we can raise some good money for the Teenage Cancer Trust. I just love doing charity work, because it's you know, you feel like you're giving. I mean, the reason I'm an artist is also to share and give and provide heal as much as it heals me, is provide healing, you know, mentally, physically, like any emotionally. So just with music, same thing, art, you know, it's all art anyway, music.
Positivity, joy, love,
exactly.
Unity, the good stuff.
Yeah.
Chloe, I could talk to you all day, but obviously I can't. So we're going to wrap there. Thank you so much.
Yeah,
for
I got to go
chat.
Back to painting now.
I know. Well, you were just mentioning to me before we started, you usually spend about 3 weeks on one of these.
Yeah.
You got 3 days. The pressure's on. But you're feeling
confident.
Oh,
my God. Yeah. I mean, yeah. That's why I started a little bit, you know, because I had to. You know, it was this whole thing was a lot of work to prep. We worked all weekend to kind of prep everything, but then I woke up this morning at 6 and I was like, okay, I gotta start painting, because I want to be, you know, I have to be done by Wednesday, because it's going to be auctioned off. So yeah, But yeah,
well,
I'm confident.
Good luck, all the best.
It's a smaller canvas than usual, so you're used to.
So you got it. You got this. Take care. Thanks a lot for coming on the show.
Thank you.
First podcast experience. How was it?
It was awesome. Let's do more.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.